A high in the upper 40s. The wind will be from the west at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy and colder. Expect a low around 30 Sunday night and a high Monday in the upper 30s. At noon central time in northern and southern Illinois, sunshine was reported. Cloudy across central Illinois. Indiana locations, for the most part, reported sunshine. Temperatures ranged from the mid-30s to the upper 40s. At Rockford, it was mostly sunny and 33. Chicago, mostly sunny and 39. Cloudy at Bloomington and Mattoon. 37 at Bloomington, 36 at Mattoon. Carbondale reported a sunny sky and 47 degrees. Partly sunny at South Bend and Lafayette, 41 at South Bend, 45 at Lafayette. Mostly sunny in Indianapolis, 45 degrees there, and Terre Haute checked in with a mostly sunny sky and 44 degrees. At Willard Airport, cloudy with fog, 37 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 33. The relative humidity, 85%. The wind out of the east at 10 and the barometric pressure, 30.45 and falling. At 12:38, 37 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The tough economy has taken its toll on most states, putting budgets deep in the red and putting people out of work. But North Dakota has an unemployment rate of 3.5% and a state budget with a $1 billion surplus. That's because of a major oil boom in the western part of the state, a discovery of at least 2 billion barrels to be gained by fracking, the controversial process of injecting fluid deep into underground rock formations to force oil out. The find could be the largest ever in the lower 48 states. It's expected to make North Dakota the third largest producer of oil after Alaska and Texas. But many residents of the oil boom region are not happy. NPR's John McChesney reports.
Imagine you live in a small farming town, worried for years about depopulation, and suddenly, overnight, the population doubles, and the newcomers are thousands of young men without families. Imagine that you live in a tiny town with one main street that doubles as a state highway. This is Newtown, North Dakota, population 1,500. Well, that was a couple of years ago. Today, it's anybody's guess how many people live here. And no one knows how many 18-wheelers roll through here every day. They just know it never stops. It seems that nearly every big tank truck in America is on the road here, making tens of thousands of trips a day, hauling water, fracking fluid, wastewater, crude oil, and tearing up the roads.
What we have now is the complete industrialization of western North Dakota. To expect a county of 20,000 people to overnight absorb another 20,000 people is ludicrous.
Dan Kalile is chairman of the Williams County Commission. I met him in Williston at the very eye of this hydrocarbon hurricane.
They're consuming all of our resources. They're consuming all of our people looking for jobs. You know, all the employee base is used up. Our road system is being used up. All our water is being used up. All our sewage systems are being used up, are being overwhelmed. All of our leadership time as local public officials is consumed with this.
The Bakken oil field is one of the biggest energy plays in American history. The formation is the size of West Virginia and covers one-third of North Dakota. There are 201 drilling rigs here punching holes in the Earth's surface, more than anywhere in the United States other than Texas. Lynn Helms, the director of North Dakota's Department of Mineral Resources, is a slight man with a graying beard and obviously enjoys talking about the Bakken boom. He says he expects the rig count to reach 225 by year's end.
Every one of those rigs has brought 120 jobs to western North Dakota. When you do the math, that's about 25,000 people. And there's another 10,000 people whose jobs are to lay the pipes to the producing wells and build the natural gas processing plants and all of that.
And Helm says, even though those figures sound large in a state with only 670,000 people, the work has only just begun.
We are planning over the next two decades to drill and hydraulically fracture every square mile of that area.
Some estimates predict that western North Dakota could have as many as 48,000 new wells. So, given that drilling will go on here for the next two decades, according to Helms, many people are asking why the oil companies are in such a rush. We went out to where they're drilling to find out. On a plateau overlooking Williston, lifelong local resident John Schmitz points to a couple of towering drill rigs. Schmitz is a landman. That's a person who obtains leases for the oil companies. And not surprisingly, he's a boom booster. He explains that the current drilling frenzy is all about money, big money. Leases bought cheap several years ago are about to run out.
Leases that were taken in 2006 to 2008, and those would be the 5-year and 3 years that are expiring in 11, were bought for $100, maybe $200. And right now, you could get somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 per acre.
That's a tenfold price increase. But those leases don't run out if an oil company starts drilling. Ergo, the current frenzy to punch hundreds of holes in the ground as fast as possible. I asked Williams County Commissioner Dan Kalile if there isn't a way to slow things down.
That's the question I struggle with every night when I'm trying to sleep. What can we do?
He says only the state can slow it down, but the state has a strong incentive to keep things cracking.
At 11.5% of every dollar per barrel of oil going to the state is reaping the benefits of this boom. There's not much interest in slowing that down.
Meanwhile, the oil industry is trying to maintain good relations with the community, staging events like this Energy Festival Parade in downtown Williston. Industry rigs and trucks of every description roar by as drivers throw candy to the kids. Back in Newtown, at a gathering of a few local residents, we met rancher Donnie Nelson, who had just paid $7 for a gallon of milk, one example of price inflation here. He says patience here is wearing thin.
Just about anybody I talk to that's a neighbor, and some of them are getting wealthy, are sick of it. And it's never going to be the same in this country, and they're starting to realize that we had it kind of good, even though we weren't number one in oil and we weren't the number one state economically and everything. We had a good life up here.
Nelson and others here still think it's possible for the old farming and ranching culture to coexist with oil. But they say the state needs to get a grip on the chaos. For NPR News, I'm John McChesney.
It's 12:45. Corporate America is jumping on opportunities to make people healthier while keeping their bottom lines strong. Leaders of supermarkets, hotel chains, and restaurant groups gathered in Washington this week for a summit aimed at shaping private sector solutions to the obesity epidemic. The meeting was sponsored by Partnership for a Healthier America, whose honorary chair is Michelle Obama. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports.
There's one thing that all of the 800 leaders gathered in the ballroom of Washington's Omnishorm Hotel agreed upon. To combat obesity, people need easy access to healthy food. It needs to be affordable and, of course, delicious.
We're going to do this herb salad. We have a variety of these little greens here.
Award-winning chef Michel Michon is usually found cooking in his restaurant in one of Connecticut's toniest towns. But today he's cooking for all of the guests at the summit, to show that you don't need fancy foraged mushrooms, Montauk calamari, or Connecticut oysters to make a great first course.
So these are just different herbs to jazz it up. And this is probably a quarter ounce at $10 a pound. So this much on a family plate is pennies to get antioxidants and fiber and all kinds of wonderful things like that.
Add an entree of heirloom grain risotto with autumn vegetables, and Nishan says he's got a seasonal feast on a reality check budget.
So when you can spend $4.50 and make a really great dinner for somebody, we can do this.
This is the average dinner budget most Americans have, and Michel Nishan is passionate. Like everyone at the partnership, he wants a sea change in the way Americans eat. But no one is under the illusion that getting there is going to be quick or easy. Cheryl Dolvin is with the Darden Restaurant Group, which includes popular chains such as Olive Garden and Red Lobster. She says a lot of her customers like things just the way they are.
We're looking at doing things silently and slowly behind the scenes. We're going to be making changes that our guests won't even necessarily know that's happening.
Such as trimming portions and calories and reducing sodium. These may be incremental steps in the fight against obesity and high blood pressure, and they may not change the way people think about food right away.
I mean, so this is the challenge. You can either surrender to circumstances as they are, or you can take responsibility for changing them.
That's Cory Booker, an honorary co-chair of the Partnership for a Healthier America. And he's also mayor of Newark, New Jersey, a city plagued by obesity and lifestyle diseases. He says in looking for solutions, it's changes in the marketplace, the real world, that can really help people begin to behave differently. He says Washington certainly can't legislate obesity away, nor does he think corporations can just take the charity route, writing a check for, say, more diabetes research. He says what companies must do is take responsibility to change the way they do business, to offer and encourage healthy choices. And he argues it's starting to happen.
So you start with one light in the sky, another, another, and before you know it, you have a movement.
For evidence, Booker points to the changes that the nation's largest retailer, Walmart, has already made. Andrea Thomas, Walmart's leader on sustainability and healthy food, was at the summit, and she explains she's working with her suppliers to bring prices of the better-for-you foods down.
There's a lot of things that you can do to leverage size and scale to get to a lower cost.
One example, she says her customers used to pay more for healthier whole wheat pasta. Now,
you can pay the same for whole wheat pasta that you would for white pasta.
But lots of people still need help beyond just buying the right foods. How do you prepare them in a way that's worth eating? That's another way retailers and restaurants can help.
Hey, Chris, you want to pull the chicken out?
Back in the hotel, kitchen chefs Michel Nishan and Floyd Cardoz have been roasting chicken thighs, not the pricier breast.
I believe they have more flavor.
To drive down fat and amp up that flavor, he's paired the chicken with a side dish, simmered in cloves and cumin.
I can really smell that clove in there.
A little bit goes a long way.
All of the dishes were served family style to the summit guests, and by the end of the meal, every plate was clean. Susan Terry's with the Hyatt Hotel chain. She says she was impressed.
It was very creative and flavorful, certainly seasonal ingredients, but the combinations were spectacular.
And Terry's not just talking the talk. Hyatt Hotels says they're ready to walk the walk. During the summit, Hyatt announced its pledge to remake some of its own menus, starting with kids' meals. They will be marketed on the menu with fruits and veg instead of mac and cheese. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, now on Route 45 in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future. It's part of what makes a Subaru. Information online at SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.